This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
PlayStation Pop Experience. Our Loki reviews continue on with Episode 5, Journey into Mystery. I am Andy Atherton, part of Pop Goes to the Couch here on this very feed. We're here to break it down, talk about the episode, and this is the penultimate episode. We got to see what's going to happen in our season finale. I don't think it's a series finale next episode. I think it's a series finale. Well, first off, Sean Kidd is on assignment in the void. Hopefully not to find other Seans. God help us if more Sean variants show up. Where I think we're all in deep shit. But the other guys are here tonight. Giggling as usual is Scott Shifley. Hey, Scott.
Andy, I am here. I have not been pruned yet to go into the void. I'm not sure if I could survive the void. I'm not boastful or an alligator, but I'm here, Andy.
All right. That's great. Or a frog, maybe, too, you know. You never know what kind of variants out there are of different people. I don't know if I'd wager a guess on what variants this guy would have, but Tim Capel is here as well. Tim, what other variants of you would there be if you were in the void?
Oh, I've definitely got an alligator out there somewhere in the ether. It is my favorite animal, by the way. Oh. If not an alligator, a crocodilian of some. Mm-hmm. There you go. Some type, it definitely would be one of my variants, and we are a man down tonight. I hope folks aren't too disappointed. I will say, I consulted the Council of Cross Time Kids, hoping they could just spare a variant, Sean, to join us this evening, and they said they couldn't. They were all busy, so whatever reality, whatever timeline it is, Sean is a busy man, regardless.
And he is, hopefully he's... His wife doesn't confiscate his temp pad again, like happened last time, All right.
Never want to be caught without a temp pad, definitely.
No, the one thing that could get us out of here. Nope, not at all.
Yeah.
All right, so yeah, this episode is called Journey into Mystery. So let's get to it then. So Loki wakes up from being pruned and finds himself facing four variants of himself, classic boastful kid and alligator Loki. Getting to his feet, Loki asks where he is. A giant smoke-like being is approaching them, and classic Loki tells them that they have to go. The five Lokis run away as the creature roars at them. Back in the Timekeeper's chamber, Sylvie tells Ravonna to give her temp pad. Ravonna does so and says that she has no idea who is behind the TVA. Sylvie points out that Ravonna's reality has been destroyed just like Sylvie's was, and Ravonna tells Sylvie that Loki isn't dead. She says that she's telling Sylvie willingly because she wants to know who's at the top of the TVA as well and who lied to her. Sylvie lowers her rod, and Ravonna explains that when the TVA prunes branches, reality is impossible to destroy all of its matter. They transfer it to the void at the end of time, where reality collides and everything stops. Beyond, the timekeepers are transforming reality into utopia, or so the dogma has it. Ravonna says that nothing ever comes back from the void and tells Sylvie that she can help her if Sylvie trusts her. Sylvie considers and then gives Ravonna her temp pad back. In the void, the five Lokis head away from the being, and Loki yells at them to explain what's going on. Kid conjures a sword on Loki and getting his attention, and then explains that the void is where the TVA dumps everything that they prove. The smoke being.
Eliath,
sorry, I couldn't remember the pronunciation. Eliath, because it's actually A-L-I-O. Yes, names are hard. Eliath. The smoke being makes sure that nothing returns. Classic explains that there are so many of them together because Lokis survive. The variants explain that there's nothing to do in the void but survive. The variants move on. Loki asks why Kid gives the orders and what his next event was. Kid said they killed Thor, leaving Loki speechless. The variant reach a hidden bunker, and all six Lokis go inside. Classic asks Loki why he wants to return TVA so badly, and Loki says he wants to live his glorious purpose there. All right, that was a lot. So, Scott, what are your thoughts on the beginning of this episode? And we get a little backstory on what this place is, and Ravonna is, is she telling the truth? Is she lying to Sylvie? What's going on here?
Well, I will say we start off hot because the last episode ended with a nice little battle scene and with Loki getting pruned. So I was happy to see we picked up where we left off. We actually, with the post-credit scene, with the classic Loki, and all the and boastful and kid and alligator Loki, which I didn't even notice he was holding until after I rewatched it last week. But I do like that. I did like seeing that part, but what pissed me off is like Sylvie's like supposed to be believing Ravonna. We know she's full of shit and gonna betray her ASAP, which I didn't like because Sylvie has been pretty smart this whole episode and like does work with her for a little bit, which is a little frustrating. I just would have pruned her right then and there, and she really goes like how Tim said a couple episodes ago, like when you become a babyface, you become stupid. And you know, since Sylvie's full babyface now, she's stupid. And like when she gets betrayed later on, when she's trying to find out, like, you know, what's going on, we'll get to that. But I do like the void. I know we spoke with Sean. Sean was calling it great value lost. I can tell why he got angry with that, because it seemed like Algoth. Tim, say it for me.
Eliath. Why can't Eliath. You just spell it Eliath?
Like, I love that you guys are saying it every single way, like, except the way they say
it's
it.
It's like aioli. Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Right, so we're getting chased by fancy mayonnaise. What the fuck? Anyway, sorry.
So Algoth is looks like a smoke monster, but to really piss Sean off because he's not here, because he always gives me hell about Green Lantern, kind of reminded me of what Parallax looked like in that shitty 2011 Green Lantern movie. Oh, so, God. Sean, I can't wait till you hear this, just for that comment.
All right. Tim, what do you think of the beginning of this episode?
Okay, so I've been kind of hard on this show, notably, in some of our past episodes, particularly like some of the rules in the physics, or rather the metaphysics of the show itself. But I kind of like this concept of the void, where we learn that the timekeepers are not so much destroying the beings that they prune as they are just kind of sending them to a landfill, right? A cosmic landfill, essentially. And you know, the void has sort of been compared to Thor Ragnarok, where, you know, Thor and Loki ended up, what the hell is that place called? Why am I drawing a blank? But just kind of a wasteland reality, right? Yes. And this is just a landfill at the end of time, where things are just going to kind of take care of themselves, because Eliath is just this creature that roams around and eats everything. I guess it's in keeping with that that concept of matter can neither be created nor fully destroyed, right? It just gets transferred somewhere. I guess that's the play on, it's a play on that idea that these timekeepers are just sending the matter elsewhere to be dealt with. And I guess that's worked pretty well for them over however many millennia. Yeah, Eliath, I can see the comparisons to Parallax, also comparisons to Galactus, the fart cloud version.
God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. From those early.
Worse.
Yeah. But listen, this is actually true to the character as he's represented in the comics. This is a, I'll grant you, a rather obscure character, but one who does exist from the comics going back to the early 90s in a terrible storyline called Avengers, the Terminatrix Objective.
Oh, God, why did everything sound like that in the 90s, Tim?
It really did. How about the Phalanx Covenant? You like that? The Phalanx Covenant.
These sound like body parts, party parts you find when you're dissecting insect in biology class.
Yeah, and the Cross Time Caper from Excalibur. Great names. Anyway, I think that was not even the 90s. But anyway, I don't know that the version of Eliath from the comics was so much this this being that consumed. It doesn't seem like it has much much in the way of like a sentience here, and the way it's presented in Loki, it just seems like it's almost a force of nature in some ways. But Eliath was like an actual character in the comics that apparently was a competitor to Kang, who we've talked about on the show as well. So there is that relationship. Now, whether that means we're due for a Kang appearance or not, I still, you know, wouldn't bet the house on. But yeah, and certainly there's a connection to Ravonna as well in the storyline. In fact, the titular character of the Terminatrix Objective, Ravonna, was the Terminatrix, at least a version of her. So there's all these little things, you know, that call back to the comics, but as we've talked about, you can't really use that as evidence of, well, they're definitely going to do that in this adaptation, because as we've come to learn, a lot of these things get changed along the way.
Yeah, I don't know what's more, when you come from my perspective, who knows really nothing of the comics, so I'm like, okay, so I have no idea what to guess. And then you guys are like overthinking it, knowing like, okay, they're gonna do this, they're gonna do this. So I don't know which way is better, ignorance is bliss, or the you know, knowing stuff, but then they go and do something different.
Yeah, I mean, that story is one I read 100 years ago and remembered very little about, other than it was quite bad. And it's definitely a deep pull, you know, for this show. But I kind of like when the MCU does that, when it comes up with something really obscure and doesn't exactly do the character as it was, you know, presented from the source material. That's sort of okay, because who the hell knows this character Eliath? Like, and it's funny that he's actually named in the show. Like, how do they even know? Where do they get that name? Is that just something that Kid Loki decided to call him for want of anything else? I mean, I doubt he pulled up a chair and told them that was his name. It's just sort of, it's one of those unanswered questions, right? That I don't know is even meant to be a question. But anyway, yeah, I'm kind of on board with this stuff with the void. There's a lot of, it's just such a weird, cool concept that I wish we had seen more of up to this point in the show.
All right, very good. So Ravonna has missed minutes, access restricted files from the archives on the Being of Time and the founding of the TVA. Sylvie suggests that there's something at the end of time beyond the void, and that it would be impossible to create a Nexus event when time is being written. Ravonna says that it's impossible to get past the void because there's nothing for the Tempad to lock onto. Sylvie says that they go through the void. When Ravonna warns that it's impossible, Ms. Minutes suggests that the prototype void spacecraft, the AI, brings up files on it, and Ravonna tells Sylvie that the spacecraft was designed to withstand the void. Ravonna suggests that they find the person responsible for the TVA and kill him. She offers to hand her hand to Sylvie, who reluctantly takes it. Ms. Minutes says the spacecraft files are buried deep, and Ravonna admits that she might not have the clearance. Sylvie isn't convinced, and Minutemen break in. Sylvie takes cover, and Ravonna calls to Sylvie that they know where she hides and she can't run. Ravonna suggests that Sylvie come out, and they talk about where the person behind the TVA betrayed Ravonna. Ravonna motions the Minutemen to move forward and offers to put Sylvie in a time loop with good memories. Sylvie says that she has just one good memory, pockets Ravonna's tempad, and then prunes herself with a rod. Ravonna tells the Minutemen that Sylvie is dead as well and walks away. So, Tim, this was quite the exchange here. And Ms. Minutes is, got a little play here showing that, you know, she's not to be trusted. What do you think? What's going on here?
Yeah, I like this scene, too. You see that Ms. Minutes apparently has some actual agency as this, like, little AI who works for the TVA. And she's very clearly stalling, right? She's... Ravonna is completely bullshitting, talking about this experimental prototype craft, and Miss Minutes doesn't miss a beat, is like totally the co-conspirator with her, and they're successful in their little gambit here and gain the advantage. So Ravonna's still all in on the TVA, right? She hasn't wavered in her loyalty or in her duties. So I think that's a pretty important character beat for her. we get the act of self-sacrifice from Sylvie, which is played pretty well because now she knows she's not actually going to die. This is the best way to actually find Loki, as dangerous as it may be. And she had the wits to grab the Tempad and carry that along with her. It's kind of funny that your stuff goes with you when you get pruned, right? Mm-hmm. It almost feels like cheating in a way, but then again, like, I mean, all your clothes go with you. Anything on your person is going to get pruned / transported. So I guess it's in keeping with the concept. I just thought that's very interesting that she was able to take the Tempad with her. So we have an exit strategy, essentially.
Yeah.
So this was pretty cool.
Yep. Scott.
Yeah, I'm glad she was able to take the Tempad with her, but like that's one of the things I was talking about earlier was like, you know, Sylvie has proven herself, but like sort of gets sucked in to the bullshit of Ravonna right here. And I don't even think Ravonna's being that she's not really being that cunning to trick her or anything. It's more Miss Minutes, but it's like really when they brought up the spacecraft, I was like, come on, the TVA would not have something like this. And it's proven very quickly, but it's just like Tim said with the dumb thing, but you know, I did like that Sylvie's found out you don't die when you get pruned because we all assumed you got killed when you got pruned from the first episode where we saw that guy get pruned at the basically at the deli counter in the TVA because he didn't take a number. So very interesting to see where we go here because now we have, you know, I will say that Ravonna is a main character. We have three out of our four main characters are pruned.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So in the bunker, the Loki's drink and boastful talks about how he vanquished Iron Man and Captain America, claimed the Infinity Stones. Alligator doesn't believe him and attacks boastful when boastful says that Alligator's next event was eating the wrong neighbor's cat. Loki wonders how Classic survived Thanos, and Classic explains that he cast a projection of himself that Thanos thought he was killing Thanos. And then Classic hid in the debris, drifted into space from everything, and removed himself from the universe because he realized only pain followed him. He stayed on a remote planet in solitude for a long time, but when he got lonely, he left, and that's when the TVA found and captured him. Classic says that their role as the god of outcasts, and Loki says that he's going back to the TVA, figuring that Lokis are good at escaping as well as surviving. When Classic tells Loki that he'll just be brutally murdered, Loki says that was his destiny, then that is what will happen. He tells the variant Lokis that he's the same as all of them. Loki confirms that none of them have met a female Loki. Sylvie is different because she's trying to take the TVA down instead of taking it over, and she needs Loki. Figures that Eliath lives. If Eliath lives, he can kill it and could use their help. The other Lokis laugh, and Loki walks out in disgust. He opens a bunker hatch and finds President Loki and his supporters waiting. Sylvie wakes up in the void in an abandoned bus, makes her way out. Eliath crashes down nearby as Sylvie runs. When it tries to grab her, she uses her enchantment powers on it and gets a brief vision of end of time beyond the void. She continues running and a pizza delivery truck drives up ahead of her. It pulls up and Sylvie gets in and discovers it's Mobius driving. Mobius drives away from the pursuing Eliath. So yeah, a lot's going on here. I love these other Lokis, this little chat between them, getting their personalities really come out. The fact that Kid Loki is drinking a high C Ecto Cooler pop me, as well as you see some of the Easter eggs. You see Mjolnir and you see Throg as they go down into the to the bunker. So yeah, this episode is really a feast for the eyes too. Especially popping, and part of me was like, wish that was the Pizza Planet truck showing up. That would be awesome. But Scott,
so,
I know because it's not a picture thing. So, but you know, because also you want to have him go ka-chow because that's the voice of Lightning McQueen.
Yeah.
Sorry, I have kids. Okay, guys, I've watched those movies so many times. All right, Dylan's favorite movie was Cars for a good number of years. All right, so Scott, talk about this part.
I really enjoyed it. Like hearing the Lokis, like, you know, basically talk while they all got here, and like boastful, of course, is like, I killed Captain America and Iron Man, as he's holding Mjolnir, and like, you know, alligator Loki, you know, ate the wrong cat, and that's why he got sent in. I love that. But it was heartbreaking with Classic Loki because like he realized he just needed to be alone, and then he thought about his brother. Because, like, you know, that's one way we've seen the Loki character transform through all the movies he's been into, that he actually did love his family, even with this show, that he did, like, you know, think of all the times he went against Thor and everything. But at the end of the day, you know, they did Ragnarok in the third one, and he killed himself so his brother could survive in Avengers Infinity War. So, you know, at the end of the day, he did sacrifice himself for it. And it was just a little heartbreaking hearing, like, you know, the old Loki saying, like, I got lonely. And that's something we could all attest to. But I love seeing, like, President Loki. I would love to see, like, I know Marvel used to do these one-shots with the movie releases. I would love to see, like, a one-shot of, like, all the Lokis and how what they did to get, like, pruned. I would just personally love that.
That'd be pretty cool. Disney.
Yeah.
Were those all Lokis that were with President Loki? Those
yeah.
Variants? Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
they're all, just they're double all check. Variants.
All right.
And yeah, that's just, and like, you know, Sylvie, you know, waking up and seeing the pizza delivery truck. We know who it is. And Mobius has a good line. Do you always get in cars with strangers when she hops in?
Yeah. All right. Tim, what do you think of this part?
I continue to remain a little bit baffled as to how and why Nexus events just sort of seem to randomly occur or to occur without some kind of external pressure. You know, it's just sort of, I don't know. It's like, well, what if Loki turned into an alligator and ate the wrong cat? That's a Nexus event. It's like, why? Like, I don't know. It's just bizarre to me that why we have so many Nexus events seemingly for no reason. I thought this was all like a big time. This was like why time travel is a problem, right? Because it creates these branched realities that the TVA is not cool with, but I guess it doesn't require that. So, all right. So try not to get too hung up on that, I guess. Just take this for what it is. The alternate Lokis are pretty fun, although I'd have to say, I mean, other than a classic Loki played by the great Richard E. Grant, finally, kind of stealing this episode, I'll go ahead and say it. My favorite would have to be the president/campaign/vote Loki character, because it actually is Tom Hiddleston, and all of the other variant Lokis we've seen up to this point have been played by different actors, right? And this is one where it's Tom Hiddleston getting to play a different version, a very different version of the same character, and kind of having some fun with it, you can tell. And there's a lot more that I think could have been done here. They've really just scratched the surface. And that was just great to see him in that form, right? And it just provides this little momentary diversion in the episode, but it's pretty entertaining. I also like that all of the Lokis are pretty much immediately cooperating. We don't get the whole cliched disagreement, misunderstanding fight scene, right? You know, that's kind of a cheap way to provide some action in your story, and we just dispense with that right away. It's okay, obviously this is a problem for all of us. We have to work together to try to solve it. And yeah, they bicker back and forth, but they're not like throwing green fireballs at each other, you know. But yeah, lots of cool callbacks during this sequence as well that we talked about. We also see the Thanos copter in the background of the wreckage, from a very crappy non-canon comic series. So that's one for the diehards.
Yeah, that's the one thing that we've heard the most about, I think, is the Thanos copter.
Yeah.
All right. So President and his men enter the bunker. Boastful admits that he betrayed the other locals, and now he's king. When President's men draw their weapons, Boastful is shocked that President would betray him, and President's men turn on him. Alligator leaps on President's hand and bites it off, and President's men attack. Boastful fights back, while Classic teleports himself, Kid, Loki, and Alligator out. Outside, Classic complains about the betrayal and figures every version of Loki is broken. Loki insists that nothing can change until the TVA is stopped, and Sylvie is the only one he trusts. Kid and Classic finally agree to help Loki, but Classic says that all they'll do is get Loki to Eliath, and that's as far as they go. Mobius escapes Eliath and tells Sylvie that he thought the TVA were the good guys. Sylvie insists that she did what she had to do, and Mobius apologizes for hunting her like a dog. She figures that Eliath already got Loki, and the only thing that matters is escaping the void and finding out who is behind the TVA. Mobius wonders how they do that, and Sylvie tells him to turn around because it might hold the key to escaping. Sighing warily, Mobius turns the truck around. The four Lokis walk towards Eliath, and Loki figures that they get inside it and do it in. The USS Eldridge crashes down in front of them, and Eliath goes for it. Loki figures that he can sneak around Eliath while he's occupied with the big meal. Eliath destroys the ship and its crew with his touch, and Loki watches, figuring that they think better of their plan. The truck approaches him, and Mobius parks it. Sylvie gets out and approaches the Lokis. Loki runs over to Mobius and Sylvie and asks what happened. Loki introduces him to the other Lokis and says that their plan is to kill Eliath, and Sylvie tells him that Eliath is protecting the only way out of the void. She explains that she's going to enchant Eliath. All right, so we get the reunion here, Tim. Well, first we get the betrayal and the fun fight with all the Lokis here, and then we get this scene of we get the real scope of what Eliath does, and then we get the reunion. So, what do you think of this part of the episode?
Yeah, so now we're getting our action, right? Alligator Loki tearing the hand off of President Loki is really like unexpectedly violent and gruesome for this show.
I laughed so hard,
and I love it. Yeah,
it was played a little for comedy.
It was, but at the same time, it's like holy shit.
He just threw it. Sorry, Tim. He just threw the alligator at him.
He really did. Yeah. Well, they did the. Oh God, what was the joke from? Again, Thor Ragnarok, where Thor throws Loki at the at the goo.
Please help.
Yeah, God, I need to rewatch that movie. It's so good. Get help. I think it was get help.
Yeah.
Help me. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Boastful Loki turns on his compatriots. He's a big fat traitor. We have to now get rid of these guys and still deal with Eliath and have the reunion with Mobius and Sylvie. So didn't waste a lot of time getting Mobius back into circulation here, which is good. I feel like he kind of got the scene that Darcy should have gotten in WandaVision. Remember when she disappeared for like an entire episode and then just showed up to in the
rammer trucking, yeah,
to rammer trucking, yeah. So we and Mobius is kind of doing the same thing, driving around rescuing people, but he has much more of a presence here, which is very welcome. So I'm glad they didn't keep him out of the mix for very long. And Loki is thinking pretty big in terms of this plan to kill Eliath. How are they going to do this? That's awfully ambitious, but it sounds very Loki at the same time. So we'll see how that plan evolves over the remainder of the episode here.
All right. Scott.
The fight scene. I enjoyed that as I was talking over to him, my apologies. I just love like him throwing the alligator. No,
it's all. Yeah. I'm glad you and me both marked out for that because a fucking alligator Loki ripping a guy's hand off is. It's just the kind of insanity I wanted from the show from the start.
And his, like, the President Loki's expression is like, holy shit, as he's, like, looking at his hand no longer being there. It's just great. I have it on right now as we're recording, like, with the subtitles, and we just came across that scene. So, but, you know.
You know what? I hesitate to even throw this out there, but I guess I will. It reminded me of one of my inexplicably favorite movies, Romancing the Stone. I know that's such a random deep cut. I know I watched it. My dad had it recorded on VHS growing up, so I watched it like 1,000 times for no reason. Because there's nothing to do in the 90s. But anyway, my point is the end of that movie, the climax of that movie is a great crocodile arm or hand munching scene that plays kind of similar to this in a way that I almost thought it was a tribute to that scene because, but then like my better judgment took hold and I'm like, there's no way anyone even remembers that or would pay tribute to that random ass movie. But it definitely reminded me of that. And I don't know, that may be part of why I enjoyed it so much.
Yeah. I remember it was, he kicks the, Michael Douglas, you know, his mm-hmm. character has the stone, basically. Right. Kicks it in the air. The bad guy catches it. And uh-huh. holding his hand out, like, over, like, you know, a pit or a river. He's yeah. like, thank you. And then the full of croc just comes and takes his hand and the jewel.
Yes. Like, and rips it right off.
Yeah. And then, you know, Michael Douglas goes after the crocodile to get
it. Oh, it's such a great movie.
You know, it kind of reminded me of a little bit throwing the alligator at is the scene in, I think it's Point Break. When Johnny Utah chasing down, when he's chasing Bodhi, and Bodhi mm-hmm. has the cat and throws the cat at him, and he gets all kind of stuff from it.
Yes.
All right.
Regardless, it was awesome.
Yeah. Scott, did
sorry,
you
Scott. No, I'd never heard of that movie. I just Googled it. Don't Kill Me. It seems like a great value. Indiana Jones.
It is, but it's...
Oh,
it's,
it totally is. It totally is.
It's Michael Douglas yeah. and Kathleen Turner have such great chemistry. Danny DeVito, I know this is... We're talking about Loki. We're talking about impromptu romancing the stone. But yeah,
we've got to do that movie at some... Yeah. We've got to do it at some point on some podcast. I don't know which one.
Yeah, it's a Venn diagram. It kind of crosses over. Mm-hmm. It could be done on Laughing Theater. Maddie could do it. Or it could be done on my new one, Blockbuster Rewatch. We'll find a way to get you to do that, to let you do that.
Oh my God. It's so and people even like and the thing is, like, Scott has not seen the movie, read the synopsis and in 2 minutes, like, drew that conclusion. I remember, like, all my life hearing the comparisons, and apparently, like, even in 1984, people are like, oh yeah, this is just a Raiders of the Lost Ark ripoff.
Yeah, but so, it's different though, and you have Danny DeVito, so that's all I.
And you have Danny DeVito, yes.
Mm-hmm. Ira, all right,
Ira, I'm gonna break every bone in your body.
Scott, right. your thoughts on this part, or
I just liked how and like we had like I talked a little bit about the fight, but you know, I feel like, you know, the Lokis feel like they're broken. And that, like classic, like, is upset, like, you know, how they're, it's just sad because, like, he's like seems to be the only one besides our Loki that is, like, you know, seen all this stuff, because all the other Lokis think they're doing right. And I did like the Mobius and Sylvie scene, pretty interesting, because you know, it just, like, Mobius apologized for hunting her like a dog and, like, you know, all the things that she did. And felt real weird with him basically saying, like, well, we thought it was for the greater good, and it just comes off real odd. Like it makes you uncomfortable. That's what it's supposed to do. So I really enjoyed that scene. But Mobius is fully on our side, on the good guy's side.
All right. So back at the TVA, Ravonna visits the imprisoned B-15. B-15 asks why she's locked up. And Ravonna tells the hunter that she was disloyal to the TVA. The prisoner insists that people need to know the truth, and Ravonna insists that the TVA needs stability. Ravonna says that since B-15 had a link with Sylvie, B-15 needs to tell Ravonna what drives Sylvie. B-15 tells her that Sylvie will be searching for whoever created the fake timekeepers and figures that Ravonna wants to know whoever is behind the TVA's creation. The hunter says that Ravonna will never find the creator before Sylvie does, and because Ravonna only wants it because Sylvie needs it. Ravonna leaves and summons Miss Minutes to get her all the files on the founding of the TVA from the beginning of time. Miss Minutes agrees with Ravonna and says that whoever created TVA is in danger and she needs to find them. All right, so this is a nice little scene, though, and we get, again, more of the Miss Minutes is, I guess, loyal to whomever created her, and Ravonna's there and still drinking the Kool-Aid, and... you know, B-15 is locked up. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't prune her yet. Scott, what do you think of this this short little scene here?
Yeah, B-15 went from being like a pain in the ass to, like, you know, figuratively and literally seeing the light. And she's like, she straight up tells Ravonna, you only want it, but Sylvie needs it. That's why she's gonna, you know, get there. And Miss Minutes, you know, she, I think she's, I think she may be working for whoever the creator is, because she's saying this may take a little bit of time. Come on, she's an AI. She should be able to pull this up immediately. So I don't have any theory for this one, but just rewatching it, it definitely seems like, why wouldn't you have this stuff ready for you right now? You know, it seems like she's doing the bidding for the higher power. Hopefully it's not Vince, but yeah.
All right. Tim?
Well, at least I'm honest. I'm stealing the stone. I'm not trying to romance it out from under her.
Why does my Danny DeVito sound like Marge Simpson? So who's not honest, though, perhaps, is Miss Minutes. Jumping off of what Scott was saying, more perhaps stalling, more maybe hidden agendas here. And I'm not sure what Ravonna is driving at. She seems, again, very loyal in her duties, and genuinely wanting to learn as much as she can, because there's a lot, and she's kind of acknowledging that there's a lot she doesn't know. And based on what she discovers, again, depending on what Miss Minutes actually coughs up, to maybe keep her busy, maybe she will begin to question her loyalties. Maybe there's a real risk inherent to that. We don't know, but B-15 seems very secure in her convictions now. And I definitely like the line that, telling it, kind of illustrating the difference between and motivations between Ravonna and Sylvie. Like, Sylvia's, they're both very driven, but this is a need now that Sylvie possesses, and Ravonna is basically just trying to do her job, the only thing that she really knows. But that is not equal to the passion now that Sylvie has to, quite frankly, stay alive. So I enjoyed this little moment amongst these characters who we haven't, spent a whole lot of time with outside of their interactions with our leads.
So in the void, the group stops to run room for shelter, and Mobius admits that he doesn't remember the TVA ever capturing an alligator. Mobius says that he's turning on the thing that he devoted his life to, and Kid hopes that Loki and Sylvie know what they're doing. Loki and Sylvie sit outside, and Loki conjures a blanket to keep himself warm. He offers to conjure one for Sylvie, and they both agree that Mobius' theory about Sylvie's Nexus event of the two of them becoming romantically involved is rubbish and another TVA lie. Sylvie admits that she doesn't have anyone close, but she has more important things, like bringing down the TVA and saving the universe. With a gesture, Loki conjures his blanket around Sylvie. She accepts it and then thanks Loki. He tells her that it's his pleasure. Sylvia asks how she knows that Loki won't betray her. Loki tells her that he's betrayed everyone who ever loved him, and that's not who he is anymore. He tells Sylvie that he won't let her down, and Sylvie says that if the TVA is gone, there might be a timeline for Loki to rule. Loki says that he'd finally be happy, and they both smile. Loki asks Sylvie what she'll do when it's all over, and she admits that she doesn't know. He says that he doesn't know either and suggests that they figure it out together. Sylvie only says maybe. So we get a nice little moment here between the two of them before, I think it's going to all it's going to get to something. Scott, what'd you think of it?
OK. Have you guys seen Game of Thrones?
No, I might
not
do this.
Really.
Oh, well, damn it.
I've only seen Romancing the Stone. You'll have to explain it in those terms, please.
Well, I know G.I. Joe.
That doesn't help me. Okay. So in Game of Thrones, I'm sorry for the spoiler in this, but this is the only way, because
I watched the series finale.
Okay. All right. That sort of goes with it. So in Game of Thrones, there was these characters that people wanted to get together, but then we knew the watcher, the viewer knew that it was the aunt and the nephew, but they didn't know that. But I had people telling gross. Me that but the Targaryens, that's who they were, I'm pretty sure. It's been a minute that they always did incest, and people were cheering for people to get them together. I was like, no, that's still fucking gross. So this is how I feel with this, because I was like, should I be wanting this couple to get together? I mean, we all fuck ourselves one way or another. Sorry. But But this is like taking it on a whole nother level. But I still think there might be an out with this, because they also mentioned in this episode that they've never seen a female Loki. So we might be going with Sylvie the Enchantress that Tim was talking about in the first or second episode with this, because she says she doesn't want to be called a Loki. I know we've seen that scene where she gets taken, but like they definitely seem to be like hinting towards the next episode is when they finally share their first kiss. They have their little picnic basket here. I don't know how I'm supposed to feel. Makes me feel a little uncomfortable. Like, would I want to get with a girl version of me? Probably not. But hey, whatever. Yeah, I don't really know what to say to this.
All right, Tim, do you know what to say to this?
Yeah, I'm with Scott. This is gross. It really, again, there, you can make all the we all fuck ourselves jokes. And yeah, it sort of lends itself to that. But this really is, I mean, if they had, if it was written in a way that was more of like a roundabout way of saying we all have to love ourselves, but without it being so blatantly like a romantic love, which it seemed like they had enough leeway at first, the way they presented this relationship, that it wasn't necessarily a romantic connection that they were going to have, just a very, like, you can't get more intimate than you know, connecting with yourself, I guess, but it doesn't have to be, we're literally making out and having a little date here. But I don't think they can really use that cover at this point. I don't really care who you talk to. This is clearly being presented as we're supposed to be shipping them, right, at this point, to use the modern parlance. And I'm really not on board with it. I'm sorry. Like, why does everything have to be a, like, oh, well, if they don't fuck, then I guess they must not really love each other. You know, it's just, it's gross, and I'm not into it.
All right. So the five.
Hold on, Andy.
Go ahead.
What do you think of this? Like, you've heard me and Tim's thing, like.
I'm the host. I'm not supposed to know. No, I think
it's. We're forcing you to have an opinion.
I know. Damn it. I mean, I don't, I think it was maybe romantic, when they were on, you know, the doomed planet a couple episodes ago, but here, I don't know. I think there's just like some kind of connection with the two of them. And I really wasn't seeing like romance there. It was, there's love, but I think it's a different kind of love. Love, respect, like they just genuinely like each other. Like they've
come. I'd be okay with that, but it's not coming across that way to me. But I don't know. Maybe I just, maybe Scott and I are just inclined to see the worst and
just perverts.
And yeah,
I think it was. I don't know. I really wasn't feeling like.
So you say no? You're still thinking it's more platonic than anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
I don't know. Well,
no, it's good to have a dissenting view. Yeah. Maybe, you know, maybe we're reading too much into it.
Yeah. Maybe, but my naivete is there. I don't know. Anyway, so the five Lokis and Mobius seek out Eliath, and Sylvie says that Eliath knows where the creator of TVA is. She thinks that if she can get close enough to it, she can link to Eliath and it will take her to whoever is responsible. Sylvie gives Loki the temp pad she stole so that he can escape. And Loki says that he's staying, he's going with her. Loki gives the temp pad to Mobius, and Classic and Kid tell Mobius that they're staying there. It's their home. Kid gives Loki his flaming sword, and Classic wishes Loki luck. The three variant Lokis leave, and Mobius summons a portal. He tells Loki that he'll burn the TVA to the ground and thanks Loki for the spark. Loki hugs Mobius and thanks his friend, and then Mobius goes to the portal. Loki and Sylvie approach Eliath, waiting for a branch, but when one doesn't happen, Sylvie tells Loki that I have to create a distraction. Loki puts a hand on her shoulder, nods, and runs off swinging the sword to get Eliath's attention. As it moves toward him, Sylvie grabs a smoke tendril and tries to enchant the creature. Eliath continues moving towards Sylvie, and Loki yells at it to follow him. So we'll pause there before the next thing happens. So Scott, so we have Mobius, you know, goes back to the TVA. We don't know what he's going to do when he gets there, what he can do. And, you know, we get Sylvie and Loki going on to try to enchant Eliath. So what did you think of this part?
I did like Mobius and Loki, you know, hugging each other goodbye, saying they've become friends. I mean, it was only six episodes, so like you couldn't really like draw it out. But it was nice to see that they come to respect to each other and, you know, obviously care for each other for what happened. You know, and Mobius, I want to see what happens with Mobius. That's going to be interesting. I actually think he's going to be one that takes down Ravonna. I was thinking it was going to be Loki or Sylvie. I'm not thinking that anymore. You know, seeing Kid Loki in Classic stand there, staying behind, a little heartbreaking because it's their home. So that's very sad to me. I did like Kid showing Loki he can still use magic, which I'm shocked Loki hadn't done much of besides like making the, like we saw Kid Loki use magic in the beginning of the episode, but our Loki didn't even do it until he needed his Romance in the Stone moment, I'm assuming, with Sylvie. So but it's very interesting, and like as JR says, business is about to pick up.
Well, Sylvie never asked him to get her to a payphone with and was going to pay her with an American Express traveler's check, so yeah. It's a little different there. That's the minimum price for taking a stranded woman to a payphone is, you know, $500. And it can be American Express traveler's checks. Does anybody use traveler's checks anymore? I don't know.
Another certainly not American Express traveler's checks.
No. All right. So
the fuck's a traveler's check?
Oh, yeah. All right, Tim. Go ahead.
You know, this Loki.
What's a payphone?
I know what a payphone is.
Ask your grandparents.
Or Sean. I'm older than Sean, which is funny how he gets all the old jokes.
Look, it's the wrong episode for him to miss. It's like, well, Andy, you're just being a real Mondo Dismo. Oh God, what can I really add to this? Not a great deal. Other than it's cool to see Mobius make his great escape here. With that reveal of, hey, I've still got the Tim Pad, let's remember. And Mobius makes off, and with a plan now. I love when a plan comes together, right? And that was one of my criticisms of this series, that it just wasn't clear what the plot even was. Like, what are we trying to accomplish? And now we're definitely going to be following one thread, which is in our finale, certainly. And that's Mobius going to burn it all down. And hopefully he'll be successful in that. But meanwhile, our heroes are staying behind. And they've got their own plan that they're quite confident, maybe overconfident in their abilities to overtake Eliath here. But eager to see how that turns out. And this is going to lead to some cool things in our final few minutes, moments of this episode.
Yes, and in those final few minutes, Classic returns and creates a projection of Asgard's building, drawing Eliath's attention. It consumes the buildings. Classic uses all of his magic to maintain it as long as he can. Loki joins Sylvie and figures that they're stronger than they realize. Sylvie and Loki join hands and enchant Eliath, which consumes Asgard, and then weakened Classic Loki as he yells glorious purpose and laughs triumphantly, and we see his helmet fall to the ground. Eliath turns to Loki and Sylvie, and they manage to disperse it and create a gate out of the void. They then walk through it together, and our episode ends. So, Tim, what do you think of Classic Loki getting his hero moment here, and where are we going in the season finale?
Oh, it's so cool. He steals the show. You know, you often don't think of the performance, the actual acting behind these scenes of characters who are, I mean, basically just waving their arms around, making gang signs behind a green screen while shit just kind of gets magicked into place by the effects team, you know, which is, I mean, that's what's happening here, obviously, we know. But he just sells it so well. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm just such a mark for Richard E. Grant here, but he's so phenomenal in playing. I want to see more Classic Loki. I'll just say it. And I kind of knew, like, that he couldn't make it out of this, because there's just keeping that character around is just not, it's like a non-starter really. But he's so good, and he walks away with the episode here. A very magically adept Loki, something we haven't seen in the MCU, but it's played to really great effect here. So in the little time we actually spend with this character, I think he made a big impression, and I was on board for all of it. So right. Yeah, that's all I really had to say about that.
Mm-hmm. Scott, what'd you think of the end of the episode?
Can you guys explain to me who Richard E. Grant is? Because I know I was waiting to the end of the episode for this, and why everyone was so hyped for him being classic Loki.
He's a character actor. I'm trying to think of some things.
Oh, I didn't know if he played. I didn't know if he played Loki before in something.
No.
Oh no no, he's never been associated with Loki before. But
oh okay.
He was in. I mean, not used very well, but he was in Star Wars. The last Star Wars movie.
You know, every now and British actor. That's really what it is. It's like, you know, the equivalent. Okay. Yeah. It's okay. Like,
sorry. I just didn't know if he played like.
He was a villain in Logan. He was one of the government goons, basically, in that. But he, I mean, he's one of those. He's been in everything. And yeah. He's always like, I don't know. He always has just a presence to him. I feel like, God, I'm looking at his Wikipedia now. Bram Stoker's Dracula, going back to 1992.
He's like such like, you know, it's like one of those things. It's like when they cast someone like him in the MCU, you like everybody's, you know, gets excited. Like, oh my God, an actor this caliber. Like, you know, what's he going to be doing? He's not, you know. There's a big difference between him and like Paul Rudd or Robert Downey Jr. Like, these guys are movie stars. They're going to play these parts. But somebody like this, it's like, whoa, who's he going to be? Like, is he going to be like this, you know, everybody starts to like, you know, get a fantasy book it. And then it turns out he's classic Loki, which is pretty cool.
Okay. I was just wondering.
Andy, did you see that movie, Can You Ever Forgive Me, with Melissa McCarthy?
Yes, but I could tell you it was one of those I watched it because it was Oscar season.
Right, then, right.
But I didn't retain that much
same,
of it.
Kind of same. Yeah. I mean, I can't say it's one of my favorite movies or anything, but
it's a good flick.
I remember him as far as like kind of recent pictures. Look at me using the term pictures. He was like her friend in that, and
okay,
I think I remember
that. That was a really.
I think he might have been nominated for that too.
Was he?
He might have been, yeah.
Okay.
So he was best actor.
There you go.
Oh, all that right. Was for the Gotham Awards. Disregard. I can't read. But anyway,
reading's hard.
Yeah,
names are hard. Reading's hard. Life is hard.
He was actually nominated for best supporting actor. So there we go.
That makes sense because he was in a supporting role in that movie as her alcoholic friend.
But I will say, sorry, we got off tangent. Romance in Stone tonight, Richard E. Grant with Tia. Hey, we're all over the place. We're delivering you classic Loki content.
We don't have Sean to keep us on track, right?
Yeah, because if there's anybody that keeps us on track, it's Sean. Yeah,
keeps us on point.
But I like the ending scene, like, you know, you know, Loki developing like a new power. I thought of we talked about this when we used to do the Mandalorian, how like we're going into the final battle, we're getting all these new stats and upgrades like it's a video game. Loki just unlocked another power with his enchanting, so we're gonna see if he is able to use that more, or he just uses it tied with Sylvie. I liked classic Loki's sacrifice because you know, sort of hinted to that, how he was a different Loki from everyone. He actually missed his brother and like professed it out loud while we had boastful, like, Kid Loki killed Thor, so we had all this stuff going on. So, like, maybe it's old Loki is, like, the Loki we might have seen in, you know, Tom Hiddleston's Loki would have survived, but what do you think that, like, I just finished the episode as we're recording, and I was trying to get a look of what, like, the place looked like in the Beyond the Void, and I really couldn't get a good look at it. What did you think it looked like? I wasn't sure if it was like a castle or what, but it didn't even really
it kind of looked like a castle.
Yeah. That's what it looked like to me. I mean,
or something out of like Wizard of Oz, Emerald City kind of thing, but maybe that's because we just saw the scene of old Loki doing the Asgard projection, which, I mean, kind of looks like that anyway.
I mean, do you think this castle, like, lives within Eliath and moves along with Eliath? Like,
I think it's what lies beyond. The impression I get is that at the end of time, which is where they are, the void is what creeps you up against this cat. It's like as close as you can get to this castle, which is like at the center of everything, is what I'm guessing, right? Mm-hmm. Where the center of power for the TVA gets you as close to that as possible, the void does, but you can't actually access it because of Eliath, who just consumes everything in his path. So you have to like break through essentially to get there. It's like a, you know, when you beat the video game, but then you have like those bonus levels.
Yep.
Potentially, that's what I think of as this castle, this headquarters, I guess, of the TVA, where the real higher power must reside.
Alrighty then. So, a lot of questions into the finale, like a lot of people.
I'm prepared to be wrong, as I usually am. But
yeah.
That's sort of my impression.
Yeah. So, some of the questions, though, that I've looked up and people want answered, that maybe we'll get. I mean, it has been announced that there will be a season 2, right, of Loki, I believe?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
I think they start production, I think, in January, I've heard. So, here are some of the questions, though. Who created the Time Variant Authority? What exists beyond the end of time? Can Loki really resist his worst instincts going forward? What was Sylvie's Nexus event, and who was Mobius before he became part of the TVA? Do you guys want to know those answers? Are there any other questions that you want to hope we get answers, or at least do we get? I don't think everything's going to get resolved. That there'll be a second season. I mean, so what do you guys think?
I want to know who the wizard is, basically the Wizard of Oz, basically the man behind or. Yep.
Who's controlling it?
I the Mobius thing, I don't really care about. I don't think it'll be anything. I just want to see that man on a Sea-Doo or a Ski-Doo, whatever they're called.
Yes.
I like to see Ravonna bite the bullet, and maybe season 2 is Mobius and Loki working together and Sylvie trying to fix the TVA. And that's how, I know we've been saying this, but that's how we get I'm taking a DC term, a multiverse. And maybe that's how we get the X-Men.
Oh,
just,
God.
Just spitballing here. I'm sorry, Tim.
Oh, boy. I will resign. I will resign my post if that's what they do.
Tim, are there any questions that you have that you want answered in that finale?
I think you guys about covered it. I will say I hope that even though we're getting a second season, I'm going to be pissed if this ends on a cliffhanger. Like, sure, leave the door open for more stuff, but let's maybe resolve this storyline and move on to something else. I think you, Andy, offered the theory that this castle, this seat of power, is maybe Chronopolis, which implies Kang. I'm still
Gotta
not going
Kang.
I'm still not going all in on the Kang stuff yet. I talked about Immortus, I think, in our last episode, mm-hmm. who's just a variant of Kang, basically. I kind of think that's more likely than Kang himself, while still not being very likely. I don't know. I kind of feel like the reveal of who it is going to be like either a character we already we already have and we've already met in the show itself, or, you know, a variant of one of those characters. So it'll be yet another variant Loki, which is kind of, I think,
hope not. That would be a cop out.
Yeah, I really don't want to see a lot of variants of a lot of characters. That is just too confusing, too lazy.
I agree. I think that's the most boring path they could take. But I think that's also the risk, and I think that's the Pandora's box we're potentially opening up now with this multiverse stuff.
Well, here's the thing. Like, well, I kind of want to know. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Tim.
No, please.
So WandaVision, you know, is going to lead into the next Doctor Strange. Falcon and Winter Soldier, we know now without giving specifics.
Okay,
in case anybody is not aware of where that could be, has some association with.
It has threads. And
it has threads, yeah. Connective tissue. Where yeah. What's the connective tissue for Loki? Where's it going to lead us? Right. Like, because we don't have another show coming for a bit. Like, What If is coming, but What If, I think, is not going to be canon, right? It's going to be like
I don't know.
It could be spun out of whatever happens Wednesday.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. But, I mean, so, but we have movies coming up, though. We have Shang-Chi. We have The Eternals. We don't really know yet what the next series will be on Disney Plus. I'm thinking based on production schedules, it's either going to be She-Hulk or Hawkeye. But, you know, where could Loki lead? Also lead us into Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. So, it could. Yeah. So what do you guys? Where's Loki gonna land in this whole connective universe for now, at least?
Conceptually, I think there's a line you can draw from what they've done in Loki to Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. It certainly seems like, what's a multiverse if not just a world of different possibilities, i.e. different variant timelines, right? But I think, as I said in previous episodes, because we already know we're getting a second season, I'm not sure we can really say that Loki season one is going to be setting up anything other than Loki season two. It is weird to me how divorced this show has been from anything Thor-related, other than Loki is Thor's brother and he's a spinoff character of Thor. Otherwise, it hasn't dealt with Thor really whatsoever, right? And we know we're getting another Thor movie, like, sooner than later. Sooner than Ant-Man and the Wasp 3, Kang Among Us, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, that's about 18 months away, that movie.
Yeah, so that's way further out. So I don't really think it's going to be setting up that movie. I mean, maybe they swerve at the last minute and it's like, hey guys, by the way, go see Thor 4. Go see, what's it called? Thor, Blood and Thunder.
Love and Thunder, yeah.
Blood and Thunder.
Gotcha. So, maybe they do that at the last minute. But I don't know. I don't think we're gonna be seeing some grand reveal of a new character who logically isn't gonna do anything for some time, because there's no. Like, there, it's almost a narrative dead end. Like,
yeah.
Again, you can't do Kang yet, because unless he's going to be a presence throughout the second season, only because we know that Ant-Man and the Wasp is so far off. It would be weird to, I don't know, to play that card so early.
All right. Scott, any thoughts?
I think Tim sort of summed it up with us getting a season two, and that potentially might be out before Ant-Man. I think it's going to lead into that, because, you know, we've kind of joked on Ant-Man, and I think that would give it a little boost, but I don't really I think we're going to be seeing a lot more team-up movies than what we've seen before, because, like, all these superheroes and bad guys are integrated into each other's lives now. You can't really do, like, a solo movie anymore.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right, so hopefully we've got some questions answered, and like Tim says, it's not like a cliffhanger that we have to wait for God knows how long to get a resolution of. And hopefully Sean will be back next week. He should be. He's told us that he will be, so we're going to hold him to that. All right, guys. I'm very excited, though, to do another season finale with you. And I'm really, you know, excited. All right, so for the On Assignment Sean Kidd, for Scott Schiffler and Tim Capel, I'm Andy Addison. We'll check you out next week on the season finale of Loki. Talk to you then.